the user's risk and the protocol solvency are the same side of a coin. You cannot assess one without the other. The solutions are need to be integrated.
Hi, it's Curtis Svensson here, founder and CEO at Web3 Labs. This is a conversation I had with Amit Chadha, head of DeFi research at Polygon. Amit has had the good fortune of being immersed in DeFi since 2017, initially as part of his PhD research and now at Polygon. During our conversation, we discussed a number of topics, such as why the usability of DeFi is trailing protocol development, what are the key risks that should be articulated with DeFi which aren't really right now, and what are some of the DeFi native products that will help bring better price stability to crypto assets? The growth of the DeFi ecosystem is absolutely fascinating to me, and it was really good to have this opportunity to hear from Amit on this because he really is a leader in this space.
It's a pleasure for mine as well. Yeah, happy to see you and meet you again.
So I would love to hear about your own personal journey with Web3. How was it that you first became aware of the technology and then transitioned ultimately into being involved in it full time?
Yeah, that's so my journey has been very non-traditional in the way from my engineering days as well. So I have a traditional finance background. Like pre-financial crisis and during the financial crisis, I mean the 2008 one, I was working for large corporations, one of the largest banks in the world. And the financial crisis was happening and by then. I was in the department in which I think if people have heard about that, the asset-backed security. So I was handling the strategy of that. And it was right in front of my eyes that this stuff is not working. Like there is some loopholes, there is some inefficiency which can be improved. At that point of time, we remember there was not even a word of Bitcoin. Bitcoin was post-financial crisis, right? The first paper. But then my course of action was that let's take a detour from the finance job and let's try to understand the process. So I took a career break and I joined a research program, a full-blown PhD after my traditional finance career. And during my PhD, I was doing finance, asset pricing, structural analysis, very hardcore economics specific stuff. Then during one of my paper, I got hold of the decentralized finance. I think it was write-up or something like that. I knew there was figuring out the Ethereum peer-to-peer system from my college engineering days. We were a fan of peer-to-peer sharing. So at that point of time, I was researching finance in my own PhD, and I got hold of this DeFi primitive. And then I thought, let's start working on it. I couldn't find anyone in the research area, research domain who was working on it. So I was doing some things by my end. And by the time Maker and Compound came up and they were building system. So I came up with this idea and proposal with already some of the researchers in the university. So we kind of shook hands and we started working on the stablecoin project. So that's all it started. When Compound and MakerDAO code was written out, I was trying to hit their APIs to get the data and to get the analysis done. And from then it was a rabbit hole. I just got, think of it like 2008 financial crisis. I didn't have a clue. I saw what could be the solution. And immediately, bang, in mid 2014, 15, 16, I found this. So there was a perfect connection to be made around this. And then, I kept on researching in my PhD days. And then later, now I have that move. I'm doing it full time and a Polygon as leading the research there. So, yeah.
So there was like a combination of just incredible fortuity there, and that you were kind of in this academic setting at like a leading institution, you know, focusing on the field of econometrics and all of the, I guess, the data and maths and so on that goes with that, and thinking about in the context of traditional finance how things could change for the better. And then it was like DeFi started to emerge right when you were looking at projects and doing all of this very active research. And so you were, I suppose, in this fortunate position of being like one of the world's first proper DeFi researchers in that regard.
Yeah. Like I was, so when I was doing this, I threw this idea with my, you know, the supervisors, like I want to try my luck, you know. Like I couldn't get an internship, to be frank, like, you know, like literally, like in one point of conversation, I pitched the idea of a lending protocol and a swap with one of the largest bank. Like, let's, like, you know, this is what my plan is. Like they didn't come back after, like, the interview was interrupted after 15 minutes and nobody came back after that. So I thought, like, let's do this completely and like where the people understand the value, a proper blockchain native, crypto native, DeFi native thing. So that's what, like, you know, I'm doing right now.
And so in the early days, I mean, how do you feel the landscape when it really started to emerge? I guess, is it sort of 2017, 2018, DeFi started to emerge, and then you had the DeFi summer of 2020. What kind of trends have you seen happen in DeFi going back to the early days? Do you think it's kind of stayed the same, or do you think there's been specific movements or innovations that have come with each of these, with DeFi over the years that have changed the landscape somewhat?
So one thing which I firmly believe, and it is true in the fact, is DeFi is about human perseverance. It's about a vision. So if you see the market's ups and downs, like DeFi summer, right now the state of the market, the humans, the people, the actual people who are behind this algorithmic codes, they are a kind of a different people. So for them, the vision, making the world better, that is so important that they relentlessly work for that goal. Like even when there was no existence of any market, people were trying to make a market, you know. And I believe, like, it's an American concept, the movie. If you will build, people will come. So the DeFi world is a strong believer of that. People, for around 6 months, you see protocol people having zero liquidity, sitting on a beautiful piece of code and trying to figure out and improve it. You see, so that's what drives DeFi, according to me. And I strongly believe that that's what drives DeFi. Like one of the greatest structural change with DeFi had, it has grown from a basement, a kind of, you know, a researcher desk, to a major financial institution's office. There are being presentations, there are being talks, which are being actually done at a very higher level. You see that the top financial leaders are now chatting about it. So that is a structural change in the DeFi, the acceptance about that. So it's a kind of a same phase with cryptocurrency has gone through. The structural change happened after the 2008 financial crisis. The Bitcoin paper was up, and then people realized we need some system which is decentralized. We need some trustless system. There is too much risk associated with counterparties. So these kind of, you know, I'm throwing jargons in there. I will kind to get that, you know, my explanations of that, what I understand. So that's what DeFi, you know, it got changed. It's changing. It's such a dynamic system.
And so fast forward to where you are now, and there's still a lot still needs to be built in DeFi. And one of the things I will want to quiz you on later is, you know, what you see as the kind of the end game, so to speak, for it. But Polygon, now they're very influential within the blockchain space, certainly, as, you know, have established themselves as, at this point, I one of the main layer two platforms on Ethereum, but then they've built out this huge ecosystem themselves of different offers. But what is it that made Polygon so attractive to you, but also what are their ambitions in terms of DeFi? Because obviously having someone like yourself on board means that, you know, they take DeFi very seriously. And so it'd be great to kind of hear those different perspectives.
Yeah, absolutely. So regarding Polygon, it's a scaling solution. But again, what differentiates Polygon is the people and the community and the level of support which we get around the people, around the code. Around the people who want to build on the Polygon. So it's a two-way kind of a relationship in a perfectly coherent, decentralized way. So we try to cut down the noise and get the building done as soon as possible, as secure as possible, and as trustless and in a decentralized way. And when we have this ethos of the blockchain nativity, a kind of an utopian framework to work in, the DeFi fits so well there, the decentralized finance, a core nature of it. And that's why the company as a the foundation, the Polygon people and the larger community does support it in a huge way. So giving it in a support in a way, like we generally have big teams, large team members working towards the success of other projects. So if we try to advise projects like how to build, we try to advise projects what to improve, we try to advise projects how to make your idea essentially on a piece of paper, a one line, or your dream, or your some scratchy idea to a proper DeFi protocol. So we help them from like zero stage till the stage with which you can launch and get the thing started. So that's where like our focus of DeFi at Polygon is there. And we believe in the innovation. In the sense innovation, we are always trying to push the envelope of DeFi in the technological space and also in the liquidity space. Remember, DeFi is being a nature of a DeFi and a new thing, it always has a problem of liquidity fragmentation, liquidity flying from here and there. So we try to be a nodal point of view where all parties can converge, shake hands, and try to make a DeFi protocol successful. Because to make a protocol successful requires multiple people. In some scenarios, you only need a technologist in some blockchain applications, but DeFi, you also need other parties, liquidity providers, market makers, market takers, institutions sometimes. So it's we try to get this done in a very structured way, but not losing the ethos of the interpersonal linkage.
Yeah, and it's certainly clear quite how strong the community is around Polygon. I think it's what's been very interesting, I think, from a when you put on your consumer hat working with Ethereum and protocols built on top of it, after Ethereum, they always seem to move to Polygon first. And some are actually emerging on Polygon first as well, which I think is testament to how successful the network's been and certainly some of the recent valuations and funding that it's received as well kind of backs that up. But I think the other side that's always fascinated me about Polygon is that it's quite a broad ecosystem now. It's not just like this scaling network. There's all these other sort of initiatives that are being built out there too. And I know that one of the areas is with respect to the zero knowledge technology. And so that's something I know that's close to heart for you and would be, I think, good to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just to complete your statement, like about the funding part, about our DAO treasury. So in last year and beginning, we know there was a huge debate, and actually there is a debate about scaling Ethereum. And as a organization, like Polygon took it very seriously. The matter of seriousness, we allocated around $1 billion from our treasury to the scaling solutions, which we can provide to the Ethereum ecosystem. In fact, large amount of funding which we got from the investors is being directed to the technological innovations, the very core thing which can make this blockchain ecosystem success. So it's kind of what we are providing is an externality to this whole ecosystem. It's not only our growth, which is going to be important. It's a growth of the whole ecosystem. Then coming back, where does this, 1 billion and a substantial amount of investors' money is pouring into? So Ethereum, the pinnacle of Ethereum right now, which is thought about in scaling, is zero knowledge, but EVM compatible Ethereum. And why it is so important? Because developing a blockchain solution is not an easy from a developer point of view. And if imagine there is a developer who has been around building around solutions on Ethereum, and he knows in and out of it whole life cycle. But the only constraint which he is facing, he or she is facing, is scalability. His app, his own protocol cannot be efficient if there cannot be a scalability. So Polygon has invested in zero knowledge scalability solution, which is fully EVM compatible. So that's a difference. Zero knowledge is a technology which can make things a bit of and faster in a more secure way on an Ethereum. It's just a layer two solution. But zero knowledge with an EVM, Ethereum virtual machine compatibility, is a game changer, because the entry cost for the developer would be nearly zero. The same bunch of code, same bunch of things would work on this solution. You just get to be an onboard. We want the process to be smoother. And when we say zero knowledge EVM, the Polygon Hermes solution, we are about to launch a testnet actually. And it has been processed. Soon, you will see that we would be launching it publicly. And we have been working intensively, the whole team. We have acquired Polygon Hermes, which was already building the zero knowledge EVM compatible solution. We have now improved it heavily. And then we are putting all our efforts on this. Imagine 2000 TPS kind of a scenario in a zero knowledge world without losing any of the security. We would be utilizing Ethereum security in that. So that would give this ecosystem such a huge boost that it will be unimaginable in terms of DeFi as well, and in terms of other apps as well. And remember, all of this is a scalability thing, and not even in terms of TPS, but also in terms of transaction cost. So currently, Polygon has a proof of stake chain, which gets tethered to Ethereum mainnet. And the current price, the gas price on that is around 2 cents at an average, and a block finality time of a couple of seconds. And we are building something, a hyperscalable solution on top of this. So more throughput, lesser transaction cost. Who wouldn't want this kind of solution? And as good security as Ethereum.
And how cheap do you think the transaction costs could get with
So that's a very technical point in the say, like it would be, so saying it would be in a lower is another point, but how much, what we are building with the ZK EVM tech, the Polygon Hermes, is a perfectly scalable and decentralized world. We also want it to be sensor resistance also. So the technology which we are building, a kind of a proof of efficiency in which lot of validators and sequencers can come. So initially, there would be fewer people to start with. Then as the adoption grows, the more people like in the Ethereum ecosystem, in other blockchain ecosystem, more validators, more sequencers, aggregators, those kind of people will come, that will reduce the transaction cost exponentially. So it depends on how fast the adoption is, how many people are willing to come, which I believe there won't be any problem because it is a decentralized, and this is going to work on a certain tokenomics, which would provide rewards and other things. which will make all the sequencers and validators and aggregators profitable. But definitely, throughput would be higher, and the fees would be, we'll see a lowered fees as we go down.
Yeah, and I guess if it's a fair way to think about it, I could be wrong here, but it's in effect the transactions get batched together in a roll up, and so there's in effect a fixed cost per roll up. So the more transactions you have in it, the more the cost gets split against all the different people putting those transactions in.
Yeah, exactly. And so you are bunching, like, think of it like a loaf of bread, right? You have already supermarket slices. So earlier you were putting one bread on the toaster, right? And now, like, you have a bunch of slice which can directly go into the toaster, like bang. And a toaster has a fixed cost. It's already burning Ethereum mainnet, right? It's a fixed cost. We know Ethereum has been doing great in EIP 1559. The transaction cost has been predictable. So we save a lot of money. Like, we can bake like 1,000 slices of bread in one go.
So you need a big toaster.
Yeah, and I believe Ethereum 2.0 is a really big toaster. The beacon one.
So with respect to Hermes, I mean, that kind of, what one could argue, kind of solves the whole sort of throughput and transaction cost issues, which have been, a criticism of public blockchain networks for a long time. How about on the privacy side as well? Because that's one of the other areas, of course, that comes up, especially when you're talking with enterprises and more people with a corporate kind of perspective on this. They don't want the whole world to be able to see what's going on chain.
So great that you brought about this. So Polygon, so that's what, like you say, like we expanded our core thesis to a kind of an internet of blockchain. That means it's not gonna be the only one chain we're gonna be provide or one small solution. We're gonna think of it like there are various use cases in the world right now. Some people want hyperscalability. Some people want a privacy. And a privacy, a kind of a differential kind of a privacy in which I would be able to verify you, but you cannot get the core identity or the base level of an identity from me. Like, if I have a document, a passport, you would be only able to verify that I have the right one. You won't be able to verify the details of it. And we are actually, and we have launched a solution called Polygon ID. And the Polygon ID, what it does, it is a programmable privacy that empowers people to create this trusted interaction. So it's like a decentralized, self-sovereign and privacy-focused identity management system. And this is based on, again, a ZK-based privacy. So, and it's again a zero knowledge based privacy in which I transfer you can verify my identity, but in a zero knowledge kind of a proof, in a zero knowledge kind of a way, but you cannot get to the details of that. So this is, and we believe, like, you know, we keep on getting, like, we keep on getting on this solution, and we believe at one point of time, these all solution would merge and somebody would be able to build a hyperscalable solution. Above that, put a privacy layer, and below that, there will be the core infrastructure layer, maybe of Ethereum, maybe of something else, but this is going to be the complete stack. And I know, like, I generally sometimes do like and don't like the Web 3.0 word, but this is what the technical stack of Web 3.0 will look like. Like, Web 3.0, what do people talk about? Like, you know, decentralization, trustless, privacy, and in all this scenario, if you add the DAO governance, the decentralized autonomous governance, like, and we at Polygon believe, like, our community has been working so great in managing the governance in their own system, helping us out in developing and improving our own system. So this whole infrastructure, this whole thought process will converge in a foolproof idea that people can come and adopt even from the Web2 world, and it is happening, right? For example, if you see the thought process behind the Meta, how the thought process has evolved in the Meta, like now you like going forward, you can mint your Instagram DPs on Polygon. That's the first step. You will soon see that we have signed the business deal with them, and that's what we're gonna see. So it's think of it like now the Web 2 billion users are about to come to this Web 3 interface in which you can mint your in starting you can mint your display pictures using NFT on Polygon blockchain, but later this ecosystem in an economics wise can be monetized in a decentralized way. For example, what stops the influencers to trade these NFTs? If I create, if Polygon or with the help of us, if we create an NFT marketplaces, then one of the great challenges with the Web2 people are having is that there were not enough incentives to the core content generators to function in the economy. Like there has been claims, and those claims are probably right, that the larger companies like social media companies and search engine companies are taking substantial share from the actual content developers. So if the content developers can have this a decentralized way to trade all of this, then we are into the next frontier of new content, a new technology. So yeah, so that's what my thought process is, combining this Polygon's ecosystem with the DeFi ecosystem to bring it in a next level.
And so in that kind of that sort of future state that we're working towards, Ethereum sort of remains there as the layer that secures part of the network, as in it's the sort of the decentralized network, but then a lot of the utility for end users actually gets built out on Polygon and that sort of ecosystem. And that's kind of the, I guess, the target there. And it's widely discussed how expensive the main Ethereum chain is, and that it's not really sustainable for people to be spending those sorts of amounts on assets and things on there. It should really be the role of the companies building these scalability layers to actually spending the majority of the money by securing their platforms by against the Ethereum main chain.
Yeah, exactly. And we are the one thing which Polygon can claim I think its foundation is that we are a core Ethereum like believers. For example, I've been going to Ethereum. I will be going to Ethereum CC events. I never miss an Ethereum focus event, even if I don't get a slot in speaking, but I just hang around and meet cool people. And that's what we from the 2017 Polygon has grown. Just getting this ecosystem built and trying to convince people like come here, your money in your wallet shouldn't be a deterrent for you to join the blockchain world.
Yeah, and it's certainly what keeps these events so fun as well, I think. There's just a great mix of people always at these different sort of builder and ecosystem focused conferences.
Yeah, absolutely. There has been instances when you meet people from if you take a flashback, what would be the most successful relationship? There is a high chances that you would have first met the person in these kind of events.
Yeah.
Like a kind of a genesis social networking.
That's it. So we don't. Well, I guess you have the proof of attendance protocol tokens as well. So yeah, you even have proof of being in the same place on chain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So outside of the, I guess, the things that are coming out of Polygon, are there any sort of DeFi specific protocols that you wanted to talk about or work that you're very interested in?
Yeah, so in a general, because our goal is to enhance and build the DeFi ecosystem. So there are various things which we have been working on and which we are currently working on. So the current market situation, we have completely focused on building something new, innovating and improving the old protocols. For example, we have been trying to build a self-optimizing lending protocol. And that has become so important right now. I'll explain you in a bit that all the, if you see the lending markets protocol, for example, Compound, Aave, like a really the big ones, everything works really, really nice when there is no drawdown in the market. And, but there is a system which all of the protocol kind of follow is that a risk management framework, which actually every protocol has its own governance style that when the event will happen, X event happens, suppose the market is too much volatile, the asset which you are providing in the lending and borrowing, Ethereum, Bitcoin, or any other asset, suppose falls overnight by 50%, 60%, then suddenly this risk management framework triggers. And then it throws out some numbers like this market event has happened and it is a potentially of things to go worse. And then please adjust the protocol parameter. Some people do it algorithmically in a, and some people do it in a deliberation way. It's kind of a voting proposal which happens. What we thought in beginning of an year that all the protocols, the lending protocols which have been launched, they do action ex post. Why don't we develop a risk management framework that can self-optimize even at the launch of a protocol? So the protocol parameters, the design of a protocol, somehow we can simulate all the protocol, math, all the protocol pools. Suppose we want to include Matic pool, suppose we want to include Ethereum pool, what will happen? Do all the scenarios and try to find the best protocol parameters. The protocol parameters are like that decides amount of financial activity, lending, borrowing, interest rate, all those complicated DeFi stuff. So we have we are into the process of building a protocol and we have actually built it with the Polygon native protocol, a lending market, which is going to be the self-optimized in a risk management framework. They even would have user interactions, which we can do. Users can go and check like what is my individual risk. So those kind of things. So we are, and this is more important in this financial, in this scenario. We have seen the fate of some of the highly risky stable coins. For example, we have seen how Terra and Luna framework went. And one of my research is actually based on the stable coins. So it's not bad to have an algorithmic stable coin, but it's not good to have a badly designed algorithmic stable coin. So that's another question. So we are also working on some of the stable coin designs, which are little bit of risk averse in the say. It's a combinations of MakerDAO kind of CDP plus fully backed with some coins which are less volatile. So those are the things which we are working on. We are, and another thing which we are actually a fan of the is the core swapping mechanism, because DeFi cannot sustain without trading. Like I need to swap A token to B token, B token to C token to immediately get into trading. Like we have seen like financial markets work on trading or swaps. And so we are also working on some of one of the protocol, which would be a kind of a protocol, an improvement on a stable swap kind of a mechanism. It would be mostly efficient stable swapping of the stable coins. So that's what we are working on. So I think it's a lot of on a plate, and some of the protocol which I think with the testnets are launched are options ones. So the options protocol, the derivatives protocol, we are also actively researching on that. We feel the derivatives market on the chain are not perfectly developed and we have long way to go. So for example, perpetual futures. If you look at centralized finance, the amount of volume in the derivatives, especially futures market and options, are around 15 to 20 times at an average. There is a reason behind that, because these are the markets where price discovery happens. The expectations, the future expectations are formed. And in DeFi, if you ask from a research point of perspective, because there are not enough these kind of instrument in which a future expectations can be formed, what would be the Ethereum price in next 15 days, 20 days, 1 day, 10 days, 15 days, then what happens if you don't have these kind of systems? There is larger volatility in the market, more liquidity fragmentation. So that is why these the regular course of the assets are like the spot assets and trading are done. Then there are futures markets options. So what I think that once these markets are developed, you will see DeFi and especially the cryptocurrency markets getting slightly less volatile and a volatility which can be predicted from more fundamental sources. That's what I believe. So that's what we are working on. I have explained it in a big, I've removed all the math. You see,
there's a lot to unpack there, and I wanted to dig down into some of the concepts as well. So you spoke first of all just about this this kind of optimizing, I guess, the risk side of things. Is that more for sort of end users, so that when people put their funds into a specific protocol, they can actually see what some of the downside risk is for them, so that rather than like with, for instance, in a liquidity pool, for instance, there's impairment loss where if you put in one asset into the pool, but then sorry, you put two assets into a pool, but then the prices move against one another, you might not be able to withdraw your assets at the same rate, so there could be a slight loss there. And so, is it about, you know, that's just one illustration, but it's more about the end users having the ability to understand what the risk profiles are of some of these different protocols.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, I think it's a very good topic to have a slightly dig deeper. So there are two parts of a risk management. The one which you mentioned, the end user part, that is something which has been completely missing from the genesis of a DeFi, because we moved so fast, like that the user interface, the user education actually was not able to grow as fast as the protocol development. So one of the greatest remarks on the DeFi ecosystem is that for the users, it's very risky. Users are not able to gauge like what are their own risks. And this, you can look back into the traditional finance when there are certain things which government actually prohibits, like users cannot play in certain kinds of and derivatives markets because they are too complex for users to understand. So they have effectively banned some of the options trading for the users, some of the FX trading for the users, because they believe users are not able to understand. So here in the DeFi world, where there is a permissionless world, and we want to stick to that way, you cannot deny any user, right, the access to the system. That's a core ethos. But what you can provide, and it's a beautiful opportunity, which you cannot do in the traditional finance, help out user in understanding the risk which you're going to have. For example, suppose you're going to put your $100 worth of a cryptocurrency in a protocol, and you kind of supply in a lending market so that somebody else can borrow it. Or, for example, if you're going to borrow $100 worth of any cryptocurrency from a pool of a lending market, you're going to put some collateral, right? And if you're going to put some collateral, the protocol can constantly help you in educating that, look, the riskiness of this collateral is increasing because the market situations are not good and you need to take some action. So the user can see this in a very friendly interface. Like, they don't need to see the math, right? They don't need to see 6,000 hours running of a cluster code, agent level modeling, which we are doing at a back end. They don't need to see this. They need to see the fine information that you need to do something about either you increase the collateral or you can move some money, but you need to give them the, you know, the education. So that's what it is all about. So this is the user part, which is going to be the game changer, in the sense this is such a great tool which you can counter the regulatory asks. This is what it is being debated in all the regulatory framework. You secure the users. It's like thousands of people deposit money in a bank, right? But if you look into traditional finance, you cannot see right now what my bank assets are doing. You cannot have a dashboard accessibility to them, like where every account has been put. So we are thinking of in that direction. It's a tough direction, but as like we at Polygon, we dream, you know, we have high dreams. So I believe it would be successful. The second part, it's very important, is the protocol solvency. So think of it like a bank failure. A bank can fail if there is not enough money it can repay back to the people. So all of the user do some actions and there is a net balance sheet of a bank or a protocol which needs to be risk assessed as well. So generally, people are trying to focus on the first part, the protocol solvency, and which essentially, if you see, the user's risk and the protocol solvency are the same side of a coin. You cannot assess one without the other. But so the solutions are need to be integrated. And the second solution which we are working on, the protocol solvency, we have about to launch a protocol, and in fact the protocol is on the testnet that has self-optimized from the users, from the protocol solvency part. I hope I answered your question.
It's a very, they're both very key points, though, I think. And this idea that I think it's true of Web3 more generally, like the usability has lagged the actual development of the underlying technology. Even the fundamental things like just using a crypto wallet, there's still a lot of places where people can go wrong, be that seed phrases, sending something to the wrong address, or, you know, whatever else. But there's this idea of how you can actually rate different protocols for their solvency. It's almost like being the dare I said, it's like, well, what is your ratings agency's equivalent in the Web3 world? Because it's absolutely key to have that balance there if someone's wants to invest in a DeFi protocol.
Yeah, and so since all this rating and financial, this gives me an eminent of post 2006 to 12 world, which I was working there. So all this rating and all has a principal agent kind of a problem. We have seen the government bashing the rating agencies post financial crisis. Some shady handshakes happened, right? So, and that's what I said, the financial stability part can only be done with transparency and with governance in action. You cannot, because there is always going to be a private handshaking which can be implemented if there is no transparency in the financial stability models. So, and that's what, and the risk management part of the protocol and all of this users verifying, this is the scenarios, the protocol is discussing all of these things in a governance kind of a framework. This all going to be create the resilient system, like we just talk about the financial stability module in system. So this is going to be not even the future of DeFi, but it's going to be the future of even the traditional finance as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look forward to seeing exactly how it gets addressed there. And I think of the when you mentioned there about it sort of spilling over into traditional finance as well, I think that's certainly a something that ties in with where is DeFi going. I think at one level you have this the more kind of extreme thesis that will be DeFi will just replace the existing financial infrastructure. I think personally the reality is that there's a lot of regulation that's taken hundreds of years to reach the point it is, and that's not just going to be torn up. But at the same time, there's an awful lot of things within the world of DeFi that are fantastic around I mean, ultimately making finance potentially safer. I think the recent events, for instance, with the Three Arrows Capital, Celsius, and so on, it was again this classic demonstration of things happening behind closed doors in centralized institutions that then brought around, you know, wider market contagion. And this idea of things being on chain, it's great because it kind of, you can't game the cryptography, you can't game the system when things are on chain, because ultimately you're relying on a decentralized ledger that no one can, you know, fake what they're doing on that. And so that in itself, I believe that regulators will ultimately come to embrace it, because it gives a level of transparency, but also security and, you know, level of trust that just cannot exist when people are doing things behind closed doors. But at the same time, it's not like everything's just going to go on chain overnight. And so hearing your own perspectives on where you believe we're going to go maybe in the next 5 to 10 years with respect to DeFi, I'm very interested to hear.
Yeah, sure. That's actually very, what do you say, a tough question, like speculating the future. And but I do have some, you know, my personal thoughts around that, that they might be wrong in the future. But anyways, let's discuss those. So one thing that I think that this idea of having clashes between the decentralized finance and traditional finance world is not right. There are two important reasons why I think it's not right. First of all, in the history of mankind, we have seen there is not enough gains in fighting. The long run gains of having a fight, a costly fight, is not good enough to sustain, the other counterfactual of discussing and trying to make things better, deliberation, would have worked better and will work better. So one point of that is very important. And the second thing about the regulatory framework, and I think that there, I think we all from the DeFi world and from the regulators, we need to talk more. And we need to talk more in the sense we need to understand what is, what can be done better. I cannot say like the DeFi world cannot claim that there is not enough malicious and very naive kind of an activity, suspicious activity, a user defrauding activity going on. We cannot claim that. Like it's out there in the public. One of the good thing about being a public blockchain, everything is public. The funds lost are public. The tracing of the funds are public. We can also not claim that in the DeFi world, you mentioned some of the companies that the concept of leverage, learning how to manage the capital is not a sensible. By sensible, I say at one point of time, some activity of a larger institution might be sensible. But as the market changes, what other people, what do they act like if a market changes significantly? Then generally in the traditional finance world, there are checks and balances. Like regulators put on, like you cannot borrow up to that limit. You cannot leverage your account up more than this. So that part for the institutional people, like who are managing the institutional capital, that is a kind of an ask which a regulator, institutional people and the providers of a protocol and sit and chat. You know, because that evolves around leveraging the institutional or leveraging an outside capital. The other part of a regulation, you know, the core financial primitiveness, the innovation part, that is something which I believe that cannot be compromised using a short-term games or putting up a regulatory band-aid around it. For example, if someone wants to improve on the traditional financial markets, for example, we know most of the substantial stock markets runs on limit order books. And in the financial theory, there has been ample research. You talk to an academicians, there has been ample research in which sometimes the limit order books, the high frequency trading, the market making, it doesn't work. You can list down on the subpoena of the SEC, and see like how many times they have been issuing subpoenas, I think, so to the companies. So, and if someone wants to improve that system, and there has been attempts to improving, what are the protocols? Uniswap, Curve, these are like an improvements over these systems, traditional finance system. That should not be trampled by the regulation. Because the regulation has to be there for a certain reason, right? Regulation cannot be there for a sake of regulation. There has to be a greater objective. And regulation, the greater objective has to be benefit of the public. It's a public good, right? Why do we want to regulate? Because we believe like the public at a large, or a set of large people, or a nation, or, will suffer a huge losses. And if you believe like, there is a benefit in DeFi ecosystem, like financial inclusion, we generally try to not discuss about this, the financial inclusion part, the global access of capital. These kind of things are which cannot be done by the traditional method. Like if you see, the governments have been pouring billions of money in their financial budgets to get people into this financial inclusion boat. And with a blockchain payment system, it's so easy to get to, this payment network, to getting onto this access to capital. And also, when I say DeFi, you take a look at the lending and borrowing protocols and see how easy for a person is to borrow a capital at a significantly smaller interest rate sometimes than the outside of the traditional finance. The interest rate on the traditional finance market depends on your own credit appetite. It sometimes ranges for... so that's actually one of the, the fallacy of the economics model, in which there has been a Nobel laureate around that. So the best use of a capital is that when the marginal returns are higher. So if there is an entrepreneur, if there is a small, medium company which tries to do something, for those guys, the rate of interest are higher than the multinational conglomerate, where the rate of return of capital is lower. So in an ideal world, if I am, the elected leader of a company, elected leader of a country, then for me, if I want to grow my economy, if I want to give access to good things in the economy, I should put the technology frontier on the front, right, where the rate of return or a growth is higher. So in an ideal world, the rate of the interest rate for the person who is innovating, who is a small medium expert enterprise, who is opening an AI based company in the beginning, a self driving car, for them the rate of access of a capital should be less painful. So DeFi can bring on all of this. It is a great equalizer platform. So that's what I'm seeing. So that's what the DeFi will go. Like, people will realize that it offers the same goals as any democratic set of people would imagine. And financially, it is also viable, in the sense everything is on the blockchain. You can verify it with highly secure system. So that's what I think on a higher level DeFi will go. In the shorter run, I think, yes, there has been a market rout, primarily due to external things. We have seen now it's economics. Rate of inflation across the world has been rising. Central banks were a little bit shocked to see. So now there has been a cliff on an interest rate. The global capital is reshuffling. you see in, a deck of cards, there has been a reshuffling happening. And that impacts cryptocurrency markets. Like, there is no doubt about it. But there has always been a floor around those depreciating values. And people are getting into the building stage. Building blockchain is the solutions on a blockchain. One thing which I like, you don't need anything. I've seen people doing it in a basement in middle of a Switzerland village and turning around, churning great ideas.
Yeah, I think that side of it is one of the areas that just keeps it so fascinating, because it is openly accessible, and with platforms like Polygon, it actually makes it accessible to everyone as well. It's not kind of you don't have the same cost to entry that the people have with some of the layer ones there. So outside of DeFi, are there any other aspects of Web3 that you're really excited about more broadly as well? Or is it kind of just very, very focused on DeFi? Because it's a huge space anyway in itself.
I'm actually focused on other blockchain economics, because my core understanding is about economics. So it is independent of only finance, like economics is everywhere. But DeFi tend to be so much exhaustive. So when I start speaking, like it generally starts at DeFi and ends at DeFi. But I've been thinking, one of the thing I've been focusing is in my own personal time is about this Web3 metaverse, but in a social media context. So I had this one of the research in my PhD, which talks about peer-to-peer things, specifically in the housing market. Mm-hmm. So I had a fair understanding of the inefficiencies in these kind of networked kind of marketplaces. And the social media is, and especially the social media network is going to be the next big thing for the blockchain adoption. Because right now, the economics is not working. Like, things are getting concentrated with the larger companies. Like, there are, you can count, like, if you see Meta, if you see Twitter, you've seen a large concentration of power. If you see the, what is the core of that companies, the core of that companies is people trying to interact with each other, right? And above those fundamental core decentralized structure, there is a unified framework of these companies, which is trying to extract a lot of rents from this economic social networking activity. So in social networking, like I have a couple of friends and I'm trying to share the information. I'm trying to sell something to you. You are trying to give me ideas. But above all this, there is a centralized stuff which is happening, which is kind of decreasing your incentive and mine incentive to interact. So this is one of the change which is going to happen, and which I've been from the network point of view. It is a network. If it is a network, you don't sometimes need a nodal point to extract or aggregate a lot of information. So it depends on. So now it's a perfect use case for blockchain. First of all, due to privacy, nobody needs to get your data information. If you are chatting, the perfect example would be if you are sending one information from me to you. If I'm sitting in a conference room, I don't expect that somebody else will listen to that conversation and try to 5 days down the line sell you the same information, to the other friend of yours. And by doing this, what you are doing is indirectly is that I will not provide a relevant or a valuable information to my own friend. Because I think by changing this information, somebody else will make a profit, and that might backfire. So this is making this economy in a sub equilibrium kind of a way. So if you resolve this, like if you tell users that no, your conversations are not gonna be extracted, no information is gonna be extracted, all the data you own it, you can delete your data anytime. Like you have a full control over that. So that is going to be the game changer in social media, which I think and DeFi and all, like it's all going to be integrated. We can do it algorithmically, smart contractual wise. And I think people have realized it. The companies have realized it, and the Web2 companies are moving at a great speed on that. Yeah, that's my social networking part. Since it is a longer, we've been chatting for longer, so I have this luxury of giving you my thoughts. Another thing is the NFT biz. So NFT biz, by nature of NFT, is a fragmented liquidity. You cannot you like you can you can mint Mona Lisa's NFT. Suppose in Renaissance Italy, Leonardo da Vinci would have minted a Mona Lisa. But NFT fractionalization, liquidity of a market, that's a big concern. Like the value of an art is another thing. We want NFT to be democratized. Do we want NFT to go like a Sotheby's, if I'm pronouncing them right, those kind of a model? Like an elite model, only few people will have access to that Sotheby's kind of a framework, and they will have hang their Mona Lisas in their mansion and palaces. Or do we want to go it in a democratized way? Can my own personal, things, experiences, my own sense of ownership can be transferred to my friends? So that I really believe the second part. The first part is already not working. We have seen, right? The what is the state of an art market in the world? It's not working. It's less liquid. It's less liquid. It's mostly a game of value driven from some other things, not from the transactional needs. So the other part of the NFT will happen. It will take some time. Proof. My hypothesis is proof. NFT for me is a proof of ownership. If yeah, so if it is a proof of ownership, then it can be traded. If you buy a handbag, and you have a proof of ownership in a form of NFT, and there is a real world asset tied to it, and if you exchange an NFT that transfers the proof of ownership in a more valid way, it also kind of transfers the digital ownership. And you can access all the digital extras using that. The NFT talks are like, in the proper metaversy thing. They always are a bit tricky.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on the NFT side. I think what we've seen for the last year or so is because it's like this new asset class, there's been the art part of it. And I don't think that will go away, but the vast majority of NFTs will be tied to the value of a real world good that they represent, or they'll just be something fun that someone likes, like collecting a trading card or something like that. The utility is more of value to the owner of it than, but there will be some that have this much wider perceived value, because in the same way that anyone can create a picture or a painting, but only very few people are able to actually create significant value with it. But at least the one silver lining with the art part of NFTs is at least the creator continues to get that royalty there. But yeah, I completely agree that, that unfortunately the mainstream application of them is not in the broader consciousness yet of society. Too many people see it as like this, the hype off the back of the art market, rather than that long-term thing, which is NFTs are going to be ubiquitous. They're going to be everywhere, representing everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't blame the sense of an art kind of a scenario, the big art, the like we see the big art or a big bank, that's a system, because this we are at a phase in which we need a sense of a buzz in worldwide, and we need a sense of an adoption as well. So always, like, this thing are not bad. I'm not against it, but in the back of your working stations, your basements, people should think about future. That's what I'm thinking. Like, the market is another thing, and building is another thing, and that's what separates the blockchain world or a crypto or a DeFi world from a traditional banking, or a functioning of a regulator or a typical Web2 company in which there is a proper line of thought. You need to do A B C D E and today and go back home.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think we've kind of yeah, we've had a pretty nice broad discussion here, and just wrapping things up, Amit. If people want to follow your work, what's a good way for them to do that? Are you active on any social media platforms? And also, are there any resources with respect to Polygon you'd like to point people to?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I'm active on Twitter. So Amit Chax, Amit Chax is my Twitter handle. You can shoot me up on the LinkedIn as well. I have a website as well. You can find it by my name, amitchaudhary.com. So I'm active on those front. On the Polygon front, please do enroll to our community Telegram channel. There's official announcement, official community. So that really we have like very good community managers who try to answer your questions, as well as you get relevant information as quickly as faster than Bloomberg, I would say. so that's one of the thing I would really. We have also been trying to develop this a large scale blog on the Polygon website. If you want to know the products, I think that's the best place. The Polygon website, again, we have a huge content team which designs the product, all the things which I told you about, the ZK EVM, the Polygon ID, and even our future projects. So I have skipped some of our future projects, Midian and Zero, but these are also ZK-enabled tech. It's an internet of blockchain, so we are not putting our eggs in only one basket. So take a look on our website. There are proper Telegram handles. And shoot me a message. I'm like on Twitter DM, LinkedIn. Yeah.
Well, Amit, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And I've just really enjoyed hearing more about your work as well. I think you're in a very unique position in terms of how you've been in DeFi and been watching it grow and working on it day in, day out. So it's, there's many, many takeaways for everyone listening here today.
Yeah, pleasure to meet you. Pleasure to meet you and talk to you.
Cool. Thanks, Amit. Speak soon. Cheers.
Hi, it's Connor Svensson here again. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm really excited to share with you that I've written a book, The Blockchain Innovator's Handbook, A Leader's Guide to Understanding, Adopting and Succeeding with this Disruptive Technology. I've been wanting to share my learnings about blockchain and Web3 for a number of years with a wider audience, and I'm really excited that I can do this now. This book covers everything from the fundamentals of the technology through to opportunity identification and implementation for your business to ensure that you can be one of the big beneficiaries of the wider transition to Web3 that's taking place now. The book is available in physical as well as digital form. For more information, head to web3labs.com/innovators.